Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable on the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue, along with a esteemed panel of esteemed people to talk about esteemed topics. Welcome to the program. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. Boy, am I esteemed.
Yeah.
Yes. Esteemed in French. And Ray Graff is here as well. And a fine way to start off any week is being joined by the wonderful Mike Spain, executive editor of the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Happy to be here. It's a great pleasure to have you here as always. Thank you very much for taking the time out. We wanted you here today because we want to talk about an event that is coming up on Wednesday and also talk about some extensive coverage that your newspaper has been doing on a, it's an issue that is troubling. It's an issue that is, I certainly don't think, unique to the city of Albany. And it's an issue that I don't think has easy answers to solve. And that is pedestrian safety on Central Avenue here in Albany, New York. There is going to be a forum. Let me do the plug first, and then we'll get into the issue. The Times Union and WAMC are presenting a forum to address the issue of pedestrian safety in the Capital Region. The public is invited to the program at 2 o'clock. It's this Wednesday, April 17th, at the Linda, which, appropriately enough, is located right on Central Avenue. It's WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, and there will be a panel discussion moderated by Alan. And Tim O'Brien, who is a reporter for the Times Union and writer of the weekly Getting There column, which follows traffic and transportation issues in the Capital Region, will be on the panel. Jeff Olson, who is an architect and planner for Alta Planning and Design in Saratoga and is somewhat of an expert on pedestrian walkways and bike path safety, will be on the panel as well. And Robert Limoges, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that man's name right. I think I am. Robert Limoges is director of the Safety Program Management Bureau for the New York State Department of Transportation. So a fascinating hour-long program that will take place. It will be recorded for future broadcast. And by the way, if you want to show up, we ask that you be there by, doors are opening at 1, be there by about 1:45 because it starts right at 2 for broadcast. So, Mike, give us a sense of how you came to this. I guess there was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, I guess, of where you have one too many, you know, just that you start to see, what, 8 deaths and 300 injuries, and you say, wow.
Well, it was a couple of pedestrian fatal, you know, car pedestrian fatal accidents within a very short period a few weeks back. Tim O'Brien covers transportation, so we began to run the numbers, and that was the tough thing, you know, getting all the different agencies that had recorded different, metrics on this and pulling it all together. And then when we saw the results, it was stunning. And, you know, the story ran on April 7th. So statistically, somebody was hit by a car somewhere on Central Avenue, either in the city of Albany or in the town of Colony, since that story ran. And statistically, 2 people will be killed by in car pedestrian accidents by the end of the year. And that's just, that's a stunning statistic. And it caused us to look into it and examine some of the reasons why, and there are a lot of reasons, and to look for remedies. And we'll talk about those remedies this week.
What are some of them? I mean, off the top.
Yeah. First of all, in the city of Albany, you have a very congested area where there's a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people who don't have cars, and there's long ways to crosswalks. So a lot of people try to make it across. And drivers are coming along, they're distracted, they're trying to make the light. Now you have an added traffic situation up by a new supermarket that opened up by Everett Road, and more people are using, not using the crosswalks and kind of cutting across, and that's where there was a serious accident. And then out in the town of Colony, the speed limit goes up to 40 miles an hour, and if anybody goes that way, you'll know that if you're going 40 miles an hour, people usually are passing you. And that's 5 lanes wide, sometimes 6 lanes wide. And there's a lot of residents of trailer parks along that stretch on one side of Route 5, which is also called Central Avenue. And they're trying to get to shopping across Central Avenue. And it's a long way to crosswalks. And often they may be partly to blame. You know, they're cutting out in the middle of, in the middle of the road trying to get across, and you misjudge how a car that's going 40, 50 miles an hour, how quickly it comes up on you. They get stranded out in the little median. Sometimes they're wearing dark clothes. Sometimes it's at night. So there are ways to mitigate it, and where you want to talk about that. But those are believed to be a big factor. You know, people are, they might have to walk a quarter mile or farther to get to a crosswalk, and they're just trying to get across street, get to the store, and get home, you know.
You know, we in Great Barrington have a similar thing. You know, I remember once when the police chief's, I think, father or mother got hit going, you're supposed to, in Great Barrington, stop. They don't have lights. But at a crosswalk, you're supposed to stop if you see anybody approaching or coming into the crosswalk, and people don't always know the rules. Well, especially if they come from another place, you know, like New York City or people, weekenders and the rest. So this is not only an Albany story, that's for sure.
It's not. And you know, we use this this example of Central Avenue, Route 5, between Albany and Schenectady to illustrate a problem that's all over the place. You know, there's a lot more traffic through Troy and through Schenectady and Albany and the suburbs around the Capital Region. And what we talk about here is applicable to everywhere, really.
Yeah,
I just want to read the first two paragraphs of Tim O'Brien's story because it puts it in such perspective. If you wanted to design a road to be deadly for pedestrians, you'd create Central Avenue. All the ingredients are there: a five-line road with no median, long distances between crosswalks, businesses on both sides of the road that cater to foot traffic, bus stops, a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit on its long suburban stretch, and small motels situated across the street from a supermarket that cater to low-income people with no cars. So, as you mentioned, all the ingredients are there, and I guess I'm curious now as to how much time and effort is being invested into improving the problem.
Well, there are solutions. In his reporting, Tim, who did a thorough job examining all aspects of it, found that, you know, other places have had these problems. They can, for relatively little investment, they can put, concrete medians in the middle where pedestrians could kind of be somewhat safer. They could put better lighting. Often it's because it's at night and people are not seen by the motorists. They could educate people. I mean, that's as simple as educating people. Going around to the motels and putting out signs that say, you know, this is a very dangerous area. Be sure to walk to the crosswalk. Don't try. You won't make it. You know, there's a risk that you won't make it. Too many people have died. If people were aware of how much risk there was, how dangerous it was, people will do what they have to do. They'll walk down the quarter mile to the crosswalk.
You know, I was in New York City the other day, and we've had a spate of people pushing others before the subway trains. And they tell you, right? You know, the conductors come on and say, don't stand too close to the platform. There are signs all over the place. So your point is extremely well taken. One thing I did want to ask you about on this, and that is that road rage. I mean, I cross Central Avenue on my way to the Ichiban across the street here. And you're allowed to turn right on red. And some of those people come around on wheels.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the law is that you can stop, and then if you have a clear path, turn right on red. But people treat it like a yield sign. They treat it like a green light.
Absolutely.
And they barrel around. There's one outside our office in the town of Colony at Albany Shaker Road and Wolf Road. And if you are crossing, you will have the white light flashing, do not turn. You'll have the crosswalk, telling you can cross. The little white image is telling you can cross. And people barrel around the corner and they look at you like you're crazy. What are you doing?
They're angry at you for crossing those streets.
Yeah. And the flip side of that is also true, where you have the pedestrian who is in the middle of the road, not at a crosswalk, who is taking their own sweet time, and you are doing maybe 20, 25 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you find a person in the middle of the road in 3-4 lanes, and they just walk right in front of you, assuming you're going to stop, and that's an issue as well.
Absolutely. You do see them, and you see, I mean, it's scary. You see parents pushing strollers.
Yes.
It's almost like if I'm pushing a stroller, I'm asserting my right to be there.
And they're not in a crosswalk.
And they're not,
in that case.
But even in a crosswalk, you know, against a green light isn't proper. So, you know, there are all kinds of contributors. Some areas, I mean, I was in Long Island crossing a big highway one time near a motel we were staying at. And, you know, they have flashing lights that make noise. They blink. Some of this could be added along Central Avenue that would heighten the driver's awareness of the pedestrians. And it's education. So there's a lot of things that could be done. You know, we're using Central Avenue as an example, but these are applicable everywhere. And that's the conversation we want to have on Wednesday at 2 o'clock.
Want to talk about a couple more of these issues when we come back. Again, a reminder that the forum takes place at 2 o'clock at the Linda on Central Avenue in Albany. Alan will be moderating a terrific panel, and we ask that you be there by 1:45. Doors open at 1 o'clock, and we'll have more on this topic and many others coming up right after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On the Roundtable, I'm Joe Donahue. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Ray Graff is here. And Mike Spain, executive editor of the Times Union. And we are talking about a myriad of issues this morning. However, right now we're focusing on a pedestrian safety in Albany and beyond, just the overall issue of pedestrian safety and how to keep people safe. I noted this weekend while watching television that there was a barrage, I would say, of ads focused solely on this issue of pedestrian safety and saying if you were in a crosswalk and you have been injured and there's a picture of a hospital hallway and an empty wheelchair and it's, you know, that kind of blurry light and sort of the light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing, that you should seek damages and so forth. And so I think if anything that illustrates that there's a lot of people out there. This is a huge number, 300 people injured. That's a big number.
Yeah, well, you know, if the legal community is stepping forward to advocate for the people who are victims of pedestrian car crashes, especially when they are in the right and they're in the crosswalk again, you know, with a red light, et cetera, that will serve to heighten the awareness of the public, you know, and really that's what it is. It's public education. Once people, like in Great Barrington, in California, for example, you step into the road, even in the middle of a road, and cars just come to a halt because they know the law. And
or
they,
not.
Well, yes, you're right. Yeah. I've seen where they have.
Well, cars are always stopped in California because you can't move.
Right. Well, I mean, in little towns
so many,
and stuff like
yeah.
that. There's enforcement. Basically. So if there's not going to be enforcement by the police, there's going to be de facto enforcement by the legal community that'll step in and take the opportunity to, basically go after cases where there's that are actionable.
We have city police and county police and state police involved in this. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And town police.
And town police.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, also, don't these lawyers, correct me if I'm wrong, because I haven't seen this for a while, but don't they get a third of your misery, you know, when you step forward?
That's not by statute, but it's the way it is. It's fairly common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, when I was a kid, like 18, I got into, somebody crashed into our rear end of my car, we went to the best of the lawyers in criminal lawyers, and I remember him saying to me, "Now I'm going to ask you some questions," which is why he didn't like me very much, because I wouldn't lie. And he said, "If I don't like what you're saying, I'm going to say I can't hear you." He said, "Does your neck hurt?" "No, I can't hear you."
Well, you know, it'd be another good topic to do a series of stories about litigious attorneys and some of the techniques they use to win liability cases. But it does have an effect. If there's a barrage of legal suits, people suddenly are now, if you're afraid you're going to get a ticket, if you're afraid you're going to get nailed by the police, or if you're afraid you're going to get sued by a litigious lawyer, is that an oxymoron?
No.
it can change behavior.
Well, so, like texting or doing other things mm-hmm, while you're driving. Mm-hmm. I must say, it's a very scary thing to drive an automobile. It really is. I mean, I drive a fairly small car, but Ray, for example, drives did I say something?
Why drag me into this?
I'm not dragging you anywhere. It's just that you drive a big Cadillac.
Yeah, okay.
Well, what difference does the size of the vehicle make?
Oh, yeah. Well, you could do a lot more damage, I think. Yeah, can't
large
you with
family,
a
family, it's completely legitimate.
I haven't done any damage to your car.
Yeah. Well, okay, but I mean, I think any size. I mean, any size but, of, you know, I would dare say if a smart car strikes a human, it's going to hurt them, right?
Yeah.
It's a kind of a rock paper scissors thing.
But even in his story, Tim O'Brien, getting back to the Central Avenue story, the level of injury if it's in the city where the speed limits are lower is generally you break your leg if it's out in Colony, you probably get killed.
And another factor might be a Cadillac versus a Prius.
Right. I mean, certainly the size of a vehicle is a factor.
Don't you think, Joe?
But, technology...
Well, if it's pedestrian versus vehicle or vehicle versus vehicle, yeah, I understand.
Technology could be the solution. Vehicles that have all kinds of sensors that will warn you and flash.
Oh, absolutely.
And the worry is that with more technology and more alerts and more reliance on that, people will feel more comfortable texting and answering their phones and talking and reading. Who knows?
Crazy.
So it is a dilemma that... It isn't going away.
But I just want to clarify one thing because you clarified very well in the article, and I don't want to. And I want to make sure that that is seen through. When we use that statistics, the statistic of 8 people being killed, this is over a 4-year period of time from 2009 to 2013, and this stretch of Route 5 Central Avenue starts in Albany just before the Scotia Bridge in Schenectady, where it is known as State Street. So
that's right. So the whole stretch, but it's Route 5, and if you looked at an aerial photograph, it's as straight as an arrow, and it's really remarkable, and forever has been just a heavily used roadway. So.
And again, we'll have a panel that will take place on Wednesday at 2 o'clock at the Linda at WAMC's Performing Arts Studio. Alan will moderate the panel, and also on that panel, Tim O'Brien, who has written the reporting, which is available online, and I encourage you to read it. It's really fascinating stuff. Tim O'Brien, Times Union reporter and writer of the weekly Getting There column, which follows traffic and transportation issues in the Capital Region. Jeff Olson, architect and planner of Alta Planning and Design in Saratoga, will be there, and Robert Limoges, who is director of the Safety Program Management Bureau for the New York State Department of Transportation, will be there as well. We ask that you arrive around at least before 1:45. Doors open at 1 o'clock, and again, it's this Wednesday at 2 p.m., and the Times Union and WAMC are sponsoring the public forum. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back after news and talk about all the other stuff that is going on in the world. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Ray Graff is here. And Mike Spain is here. And I have been misidentifying Mike all morning. Mike is the associate editor of the Times Union. And I just want to correct that because the mistake is all mine, not his. And Mike, congratulations on your promotion.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
It's wonderful to have the associate editor here of the Times Union, as it always is when Mike joins us. You had an interesting story on the front page of the newspaper yesterday having to do, we've all been talking a lot about guns, about gun safety, about gun legislation. We've been talking a lot about how different states and the nation are dealing with these issues, and you're looking at a supply and demand issue, which is a concern that guns will be perhaps the use of guns will be curtailed in some way, shape, or form, which means a rush on people going out and buying bullets. And what I found interesting about the story is we sort of heard this initially after Newtown, but this is something that continues to go on.
That's right. Brian Fitzgerald, who watches a lot of the police stuff for us and is part of our police coverage team at the Times Union, was talking to police. That every police officer, state trooper, correction officer in New York must pass a firearms recertification test every year. It varies by department on how much time you have to spend at the shooting range. But one thing you do want is, in the midst of all this discussion about who should have access to guns, we want the police to be well-trained at using them. So in order to get that certification, they have to go out and they have to do some time on the firing range. And, you know, Albany County's Sheriff Department goes through 70,000 rounds of ammunition a year. And
this is in practice rounds, that, mostly.
Strictly, yeah.
Yeah.
For those of us who don't know the nomenclature, a round is a bullet.
A bullet, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, you know, and there's a quote from the sheriff, Craig Apple, Albany's sheriff, Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple said, "All the sudden bullets are like gold." You know, he's like says getting like the gasoline price is just going up, and it's a supply and demand thing. And you know, they're spending up to $40,000 a year to get the bullets they need for the Glocks and the Bushmasters and the other rifles that they have to maintain as part of having a ready police force. And, you know, they're worried. And they're what it's causing is delays around the country. Some police departments and sheriff departments have said that they're waiting several months to get replenished supplies of bullets that they need for training. And part of the problem is even the Department of Homeland Security, which is the federal agency, which has big bucks, goes in and they'll buy like a billion and a half rounds of ammunition, bullets, at a time. And that's really five bullets for every man, woman, and child in the United States, Brian points out. And you know, sucks the market dry. And
on the other hand, it's tough on the agencies that they can't get the bullets. But what about the bad guys? You know, I mean, in the same way you mentioned gas, Mike, going up, we know that there are many people who think that we should drive up the price of gas in order to have people, you know, conserving.
Well,
Ray, let the records show that Ray is shaking his head back and forth.
I have a
clearly
little
don't.
Head cold.
Oh, you have a little head cold? That's morning. What it yeah. is? Yeah.
And a Cadillac to yeah. fuel.
Yeah. All right, now.
but I digress.
Yes, me too.
Has been some people have advocated for having a bullet tax.
I'm all for it.
Yeah,
you know, police agencies would be exempt from that. That could mitigate it.
Sorry to interrupt, but you point out in the article real quick. Brian points out in the article that in most cases the police agencies buy in bulk. The county agencies will buy at one time, but usually at a cost substantially lower than what the consumer would pay.
Yes, in one case they're comparing the state rate, so to speak, because the state kind of gives them the advantage of buying in bulk. Is not as there's sometimes you can go out in the open market and beat that, and that's what some of these police agencies that have very limited budgets, you know, are trying to do. They're trying to play the state price against what's out there and what they can find, and usually they're able to get a
Does the NRA get a discount?
Yeah, I don't think this. I mean, you know, it's not directly the NRA. It's the organizations that are probably the primary funders of the NRA, and that's the ammunition companies and the firearms companies. Oh. You know, that are certainly must be cashing in. But it's been said that as soon as President Obama took office, after he was elected in 2008, people thought that it would have an impact on the availability of firearms and ammunition, and it stepped up the purchases. And you know what happened here back in January when New York was you know, passing the SAFE Act, and the same thing happened just last week in Connecticut before the bill took place that was going to restrict the access to firearms.
You know, I talked to Representative Carolyn Maloney this morning for the Congressional Corner, and she's got a bill in to make sure that everybody who has a weapon insures it in the same way you would insure a car. I like that idea a lot.
Right.
She says there are people who don't and who are threatening her with death and other things.
Well, it certainly recognizes that owners of firearms have liability, and you know, just like the owner of a car has liability, or the owner of a house has liability, and that you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on it. I mean, would your liability of a firearm that you keep at your house be covered by your homeowner's policy? I don't know. You know, there's always those things, but it is one approach to it.
So back to the issue that Brian was writing about in the article. So I guess municipalities and agencies have the question now of increasing the budget item, the line item for that particular purchase, or to alter it in some way. But that doesn't seem you don't want that, I assume.
That's right. I mean,
is there
certainly
a belt tightening in the sense of how many rounds they use and use that to be, you know, to be more judicious in how many bullets they use in the testing?
Well, the end result, you know, because of the high price but also because of the limited availability. Around the country, some other police agencies have had to wait months for supplies.
Because they've run out.
Because they've run out and there's not more supplies immediately available. It's causing a delay or a diminishing in the amount of training that officers who are carrying firearms are getting, you know, and you want them to be, as I said, I think I want those guys to be know what they're doing when they are actually out and they have a situation where they have to use a weapon in deadly force. You want them to be as expert as possible, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So this is risking some of that. I think it's a good issue that people don't think of. It's sort of a fallout of all of the concern about firearms.
And I want to move on, but one of the things that I thought surprising in the article is they said, really, this is going to kick in more next year than in 2014 as sort of all this, you know,
right.
Rolls out, if you will.
A lot of contracts were already in place before Newtown.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that we're just starting to see the beginning of.
And while I don't want to get it wrong, I want to say very quickly, in my state of Massachusetts, and in our listening area, there's a little town of Egremont where the police chief is in apparently a little bit of hot water. And one of the issues is all of the things that, as I understand it, that have been sort of put aside, the weapons and other things that the police want, whether or not that's all been delivered to them. I may have that slightly wrong. I think I got it right, though.
We'll fact check you during the break.
That's good.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back and continue our conversation on the roundtable. Hey, it's April 15th. What does that mean?
Oh, boy.
Tax day. Yay. Let's talk about that and other stuff.
Oh, boy.
We'd love to hear from you, roundtablewamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Well, it is April 15th, which means that it is tax day, and while your state and your situation may vary because the deadlines, what is it? Is it Patriot Day?
Patriot's Day we have in Massachusetts.
That's only for state returns.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
Massachusetts
state
residents are bound to file their federal tax return by midnight today.
That's right. And so there are...
the Massachusetts resident suddenly winced.
No, we already filed.
Suddenly ran out and got his checkbook.
We filed.
You know, I think this is... there's a lot of ways to look at this. I mean, look, it's something... Death and taxes, obviously. That's one of those things that you have to do every year. Everybody knows that it's coming. You try to plan the best you can for it. You hope... Hopefully, get your act together, but it's always fascinating to me of how this is a media item every year. And how did you cover it at all this year?
Yeah. I mean, the interesting wrinkle this year is because so many people were affected by the Massachusetts Patriots Day. People in New York and surrounding states were sending their returns to Andover, Mass. The IRS has changed it. You no longer, if you mail your tax returns in, which is an increasing minority.
Right. But most by e-file.
Right. But if you do it, you don't send it to Andover, Mass anymore. You send it off to the Midwest, I believe, or something, or Maryland maybe. But you're not affected by that. So as a result, we don't get that extra day that New Yorkers have sort of benefited from. And then last year, Emancipation Day is April 16th in Washington, D.C. So the IRS would, if you already had an extra day, you would get another extra day. So you wouldn't have to file till the 17th. That was the case last year. But this year, it is the 15th for the first time in a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's going to be. So many people are e-filing that the post office isn't doing the big deal like they used to. They used to have bands and they used to have entertainment at the main postal facility right
where they were open late
and
they would have coffee and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, now you're lucky if they're open at all.
Right. I mean, it's not a... It's really changed. You don't have that same kind of thing. There's going to be the main postal office will be open only till 7 tonight. That's in the town of Colony off New Corner Road. And then the Colony Center Mall has a post office, and that'll be open till 8 o'clock. But if you're in that situation right now and you haven't filed your return, it's advisable that you look at filing an extension.
No, we spend a lot of money in our family making sure. We were open on Saturday. We were there. It was quite a line in Great Barrington, yeah. I have to tell you, which is very interesting considering the fact that we were thinking about closing
the
up
post office
on
right,
Saturday.
Yeah.
That's already been announced. It's not going to happen. But we have always been a little paranoid about this and get return receipt requested on our tax returns because people foul up, and it's nice to have those little green cards.
Yeah,
well, I mentioned that.
In the end, you're going to have to pay. So,
right. And it is, but I think, Alan, you make a great point. I mean, if you have that card and somebody says, well, you didn't have it on time, yeah, you can yeah. say, well, see, look,
sure.
I have it. honest to God, I mailed it.
Yeah.
And that's nice to have, well, without a doubt.
Yeah. Interestingly, the Associated Press had a story today where they're saying that, except for a few areas around the country, audits for if you're just a regular Joe or Alan or Ray or Mike, you don't have to worry too much. They're focusing their audits on people in the higher income bracket, a couple $1 million a year. They're really trying to increase that. And the benefit is we don't get audited at our level nearly as much. And
I thought you were in that group, Mike.
Well, I confess that I do not make
nice.
I'm not in the 1% or anything.
You wear nice shirts.
You're the 1%. You wear nice shirts. that's the ringer there.
I'm a Macy's kind of guy.
Yes. I thought that was interesting. It was about IRS auditing dropped, and there's sort of that concern. I guess has lessened a little bit, which is. I think they, even in that article, say a lot of it has to do with because so many more people do it with tax preparers now, and the burden's sort of on them.
And you better hope that the tax preparer knows what they're doing, but you're still responsible for having signed those returns.
You are, right. Yeah, but absolutely.
But if a tax preparer does sign also, he's not free from some consideration on that, too.
Well, yeah, and it's very interesting. As you drive up the very same Central Avenue, you're concerned about safety. And you see guys in Statue of Liberty
isn't that
suits
a, we did
a
profile of one of those guys like a couple weeks ago. They get minimum wage and they go out there and they dance around and we all
does
have
anybody
seen
really stop because of the guy in the Statue
sure,
of Liberty
sure.
thing?
Well,
yeah, they do.
Yes, I want my taxes prepared by a company that has a costume budget.
A costume.
Yeah, I feel better about that.
It's only minimum wage.
I feel.
I hope they
better
pay their accountants more.
The truth of the matter is, guys, that there are a lot of people in this country who do not pay their taxes. They don't pay taxes. It's extraordinary. You'd think you'd get 100%, but you don't. And there are all kinds of people with the political rationales for not paying up.
Well, it's not in the Constitution. It was a Wesley Snipes, right? Just got out of jail.
We don't pay
taxes because it's not part of the Constitution, and I don't have to. And there's a way of getting out of it. And,
yeah.
and it's
and they and
you
these,
don't get out of it.
And these you don't. And these urban myths grow up about it. For example, there's one: if you don't pay any taxes because they can't get you. If you've never paid. They can only get you if you have paid. Now, that's,
of course,
balderdash.
Once you establish your Social Security number, I think they got you.
Yeah. So that's at infancy.
Yeah.
Yes. Let us talk about another two big stories real quick before we wrap up the panel, and that is North Korea. Again, in the news, Secretary of State John Kerry said Sunday that the United States was prepared to reach out to North Korea if they made the first move to abandon their nuclear weapons program. Meanwhile, the world is sort of still on watch. And I don't know if it seems that the situation is cooling down or we're just at a pause. And I guess that's kind of what we're waiting for.
Well, there's a lot of reports over the weekend that Kim Jong-un, the 20-something leader of North Korea, hasn't been seen for a couple of weeks. Maybe
uh-oh.
He's just playing it cool. It's the speculation. But there's so much we don't know about how things are operating there. That's the really scary thing. I mean, is he just some wacky kid, or is he a wacky kid with the red button in his hand that can launch a missile that...
And is it a general who is really in charge of the wacky
kid?
Right.
Yeah, you really don't know, and it's that's the frightening thing.
I see a very interesting sequential thing here. Kerry goes and visits with the Chinese leader, and Kerry's rhetoric calms down significantly. So now, you know, he's being much more rapprochement, to one-on-one, which is what the North Koreans have always said that they wanted. You know, nobody, no six states, but just one and two, and we would talk to them. And I think it also plays to the fact that these guys are dangerous. I mean, in the beginning, everybody, the line was, they don't have it, they can't do it, they don't know what they're doing. And
if they did have it, it'd only go 5 feet.
Yeah. And now, I think there's more credence given to the fact that they could be dangerous by mistake or otherwise.
Yeah, it is frightening, and it's the hard part is we just don't know very much about it. I mean, the most information we've gotten out of North Korea in the last few weeks is from Dennis Rodman. Think about it.
Yeah, there's that. The other issue we want to talk about, which was the big story over the weekend as far as the Sunday news shows, and, you know, if there wasn't the Sunday news shows, then there probably wouldn't be much news even generated on a Sunday other than the Masters tournament. But Senator Marco Rubio was on seven. Seven talk shows
this record,
weekend.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's pretty much all of them, I think, of the Sunday talk shows. And he is a member of the bipartisan group of eight senators looking to unveil their immigration legislation tomorrow. And he has come out quite positively, full-throated support for the immigration bill. And what can we read into that?
We can read it's democracy at work. So you get an election, a presidential election, and one candidate gets 70% of the Hispanic vote, and all of a sudden the Republicans say, uh-oh. And Rubio, of course, who sees himself as a potential Republican candidate for president of the United States, says, I better get some of this.
Yeah, well, it's a positive thing that you're getting this kind of bipartisan agreement on such an important issue. And, you know, it could be the beginning of something really, really good, and that is a solution to this dilemma that we're in over immigration and what to do with people who are here and who are undocumented and what to do about the borders and how to give people a fair shake, the children especially that come in who happen not to have been born here but were virtually American by every other measure. You know, they grew up here. They are part of our culture, our society. And there's benefits to it, too, by documenting the people who are here without citizenship. You're going to get them into the system,
right.
You know, and they'll be taxpayers. So they'll be will
many
be the
of them
benefits.
Are taxpayers, of course, because
yes,
there's
right.
deductions for the, you know, but some are
for
not.
Service.
You're right.
Yeah.
But what I'm astounded by is how fast things can change. In the old days, you had one loudmouth on cable TV yelling and screaming about this kind of thing, and everybody's going, yeah, it was untouchable. And then a few years later, everybody's rushing to get on board.
Yeah. No, it would be a
Lou Dobbs
incredible
would be the
thing.
That's who,
that was.
Yeah.
I don't like
Lou Dobbs.
I don't like to mention people. You probably think I just forgot his name.
No, not at all. I just wanted to clarify those at home.
Maybe.
The other thing is, which I find okay. So let me be in the 2 minutes that we have left. Let me be incredibly idealistic and naive and say and ask the question, which is, when you have this kind of bipartisanship and you see democracy at work. Can we be a little optimistic that perhaps that vibe will seep into other topics of major discussion, i.e. budget and so forth?
The problem is that politics is a zero-sum game. There's one winner and one loser. And of course, we just had a Democratic president elected, and there are those people in both parties who think you don't give an inch to the other guys, because if you do, you're on your way out.
Well, we can try and be optimistic. I mean, if this works...
God, I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they'll solve a few other problems.
God, I'm happy. Well, we will continue to be optimistic. We welcome your optimism as well, or even your cynicism, even your sarcasm, whatever you wish to heap upon us.
Detachment.
Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page, or by tweeting us at @WAMC Roundtable. @WAMC Roundtable. My great thanks to Mike Spain, Associate Editor of the Times Union. Mike, it's a great pleasure always to have you aboard. Thank you very much.
Happy to be here.
Also, just a reminder, the forum on public safety on Central Avenue is happening on Wednesday. You can find out more information by going to WAMC.org, TimesUnion.org, or .com has that information as well. And it's Wednesday at 2 o'clock. Alan will be hosting. Alan, thank you very much. We'll
thank
see you,
Joe.
Tomorrow. Raymond, or no, we won't, actually.
No, I have a doctor's appointment. Follow up on my man.
Excellent.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Ray, you and me.
Yeah, okay.
And Ken Tingley from the Post Star of Glens Falls on the program tomorrow. You're listening to The Roundtable on The Roundtable on WAMC.